us in the everyday, me and you. The Good News and Shoes.
This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good News and Shoes.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Alan Love, and if you've tuned in to hear Team Martech, there's a special show. Thanks to Joe Martech and his team for giving the opportunity to talk about something very important, and that's how we get around. This next hour, I have a guest with us today who is going to talk about many things involving transportation, how people get around. But first, I would just like to thank Team Martech for giving up this hour to us. Joe Martech, of course, the host and registered securities principal. Victoria Lloyd, from a realtor from RE/MAX Realty of Stewart. Vince Rizzino, not only a CPA, a forensic CPA, he's recognized as an expert by the courts. Greg Fasula, attorney who specializes in estate planning. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, and Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Again, thanks to Team Martech. I have the privilege today of having the executive director of the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization with us. His name is Peter Buchwald, and Peter originally was born in Chicago, and he then went out to California. But I'm going to let Peter talk about himself for a moment or two. Peter, welcome.
Well, Alan, thank you for having me. I look forward to speaking with you about all things transportation here over the next hour. That's right. I did grow up in Chicago and then in high school, finished high school in San Diego before going to college at the University of California, Davis. And I graduated with a degree in civil engineering and worked in both the public and private sectors until coming to Florida in 2004. And that's when I started work with the city of Fort Pierce in their planning department before having the opportunity to be the executive director here with the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization about just over 9 years ago.
What is the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization? What do you do? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization, also known as the St. Lucie TPO, is an independent metropolitan planning organization responsible for the planning and programming of transportation projects that receive federal funding for the city of Fort Pierce, the city of Port St. Lucie, St. Lucie Village, and the unincorporated areas of St. Lucie County. Now, these metropolitan planning organizations were first established by federal law in the 1970s in order to receive federal funding. And these are for areas that exceed 50,000 in population. So you have to have one of these organizations in order to receive the federal funds.
And is there also a local funding that comes into play?
Well, we do utilize state funding as well, and then local funding by way of local gasoline taxes may be used to leverage the federal and state funds. Now, the TPO is comprised of a board of elected officials, and they meet every other month to act on plans and programs to try and meet the transportation needs of the area.
Now, one of the most important things of what you do is getting advice from various committees. Citizen participation is very, very important. And you have a number of committees that you work with. I happen to be on two of them. One is the Citizens Advisory Council. And what does that committee do?
Well, you're absolutely correct there, Alan. We have several committees that provide review the plans and programs that the board ultimately adopts. And these committees provide recommendations from different perspectives. And that's why we have several committees. We have a technical advisory committee that's comprised of staff members from the local jurisdictions, such as your city planners, your county engineer, and from the airport and the port. They provide technical recommendations on the plans and programs. But we also have the Citizens Advisory Committee, and that's made up of individuals that represent the municipalities and the county, and they're appointed by the board, and they review the plans and provide a different perspective, you know, more of a user perspective and what the citizen perspective is. But we also have what's known as the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, and that's like a hybrid committee. What the intent with that committee was to combine the technical expertise of members from a technical advisory committee along with members from the public. So we'll have members from city and county staffs who aren't already represented on the technical advisory committee. Those are like from Parks and Rec Department, from those that may involve programming of services and activities that may use a transportation system, along with representatives from bicycling advocates, as well as hiking advocates and walking advocates and advocates for the disabled. And so together, that forms another perspective to review these plans and programs. But we also have another board that's called the Local Coordinating Board for the Transportation Disadvantaged. This is made up also of residents who represent the disabled, as well as social service organizations, such as the food banks that represent food banks and other social service organizations. And they also provide guidance on meeting the mobility needs for residents and the transportation disadvantaged.
Well, if I'm a member of the public and I'm interested in transportation, how can I get involved in getting on one of these committees?
I'm glad you asked that, because as you said, public involvement is a critical component of the metropolitan planning process. In fact, what we call it is a comprehensive, continuous, and cooperative process, also known as the 3C process. So we're always looking for input, always having plans and programs that are continuous and comprehensive. So one of the ways is to apply to be appointed on one of these committees, and that simply can be done by going to our website at stlucietpo.org and completing one of the applications for the advisory committees and sending that in. But that's not the only way that the public can provide input and provide their recommendations. You can also appear at one of our meetings. All of our meetings are open to the public, including these advisory committee meetings, and they all have a public comments section where the public is welcome to provide their opinions on our plans and programs, but also through our website. You can also provide comments on some of our plans and programs directly, and also on social media, on Facebook and Twitter. So there's a variety of ways in which the public can participate in the process. And again, the important thing is we're trying to not only identify the transportation needs, but to meet the transportation needs of the public. And so we need the input to understand not only what the need is, but what is the priority for the needs.
That's very important, what you just brought up, prioritizing the needs of not only a specific person, but the population in general. And every meeting of these committees, the public has a chance to speak and to provide their input. And that's really where you need to get a lot of guidance from, besides the meetings. You also do a number of surveys throughout the year, if I'm correct.
Right, that is correct. Because as part of the process, we're required to prepare and adopt several different types of plans. And the first plan, really the primary plan, is called the Long Range Transportation Plan. Now that, we have it right now, the current version of it is called the GO 2040 Long Range Transportation Plan. And this plan is adopted every 5 years, and what it is meant to do is to take a long-term look at what will be the transportation needs on a 25-year horizon. So in the year 2040, what are the needs and how are we going to meet those needs? And another plan that we do is called the Transportation Improvement Program. Now this is a shorter-term plan that covers 5 years, and what this identifies is those projects that are going to be completed or studied or designed or within the next 5 years. And it includes not only roadway projects, but also sidewalk projects, what bus services are gonna be implemented, airport and port projects. And so one of the ways the public can provide input is as we do update these plans, we have various workshops, community meetings, as well as the surveys. That's also important for the public to provide input on some of the projects that are listed in the plan to identify whether they believe it's gonna meet their needs or not. And we don't stop there. The other third plan we do is the Unified Planning Work Program. And this is a 2-year work plan for the transportation planning organization itself. And this identifies what kind of planning projects, what we will be doing and how we're going to be paying for it. And again, we provide input and opportunities for the public to identify projects that they think and planning tasks that they think should be completed. and how you can also provide the input, again, is through our website as these plans are prepared and produced, as well as the public meetings where the plans are discussed and presented.
Another one of your committees is the local coordinating board for the disadvantaged as far as transportation is concerned. And that's a point that I want to make, that what you're doing is you're looking at transportation for everybody, not specific groups. In other words, if you have a disability, you're looking at how to service people that have disabilities. But if you have no disabilities at all, you're also trying to plan way out in the future, whether you ride a bike, whether you walk, whether you drive a car, whether you take one of the buses or rail service, whatever it may be, you go through the whole spectrum of transportation, and you have to look ahead as much as, let's see, you said 2040, that's 23 years from now you're planning. Mm-hmm. There's certainly going to be a lot of changes.
Yeah, that's excellent math, Alan. You did that really quickly without even using a calculator. I appreciate that. But that's the... what you're referring to, that's correct, because there's several different types of needs we're trying to meet. We're not only trying to meet the need for the automobile, but meet the need for the other modes. And it's called, sometimes referred to as multimodal. And really it's providing other mobility options because individuals as seniors may not be able to drive, need to provide another way for them to access the essential services, to go to the grocery store, to visit the doctor's office, those types of things. And also individuals that cannot afford a car. So there's types of services that are coordinated through that local coordinating board for the transportation disadvantaged. One of these services is known as the demand response service, also known as paratransit. Now this is a door-to-door public transportation that requires reservations to schedule the trips. Now this service is for senior citizens, so low-income individuals, or persons with disabilities who are unable to transport themselves or who cannot afford to pay for private transportation. Now, eligibility for this service is determined through an application process. So those applications are available by calling Community Transit. And I'll give this number a couple times throughout the show, but their number is 772-464-7433. And that's 772-464-7433. Also, that's is 464-RIDE. So 772-464-RIDE, which is 7433. So that is some of the services that we provide. But, you know, Alan, something that doesn't get enough attention, I think, and we're always trying to figure out what's the best way to provide exposure and to make it a better service, and that's our fixed route bus service in St. Lucie County, because we currently have 7 fixed routes providing public transportation service throughout the county. One route runs along US 1. We have 2 routes operating circulator service in Fort Pierce, 3 routes serving Port St. Lucie area, as well as one connecting to Indian River County. Our route along US 1 connects to Martin County. So that's the other thing we're trying to do, establish county to county connections, because as we know that the residents and commuters, they don't operate by county lines. So we want to ensure that we are getting people to where they need to go. Now this service is provided Monday through Friday, except holidays, between the hours of 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. for 4 of the routes, but we have extended service for routes 1, 2, and 3. That's from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and on Saturday from 8 a.m. to 12 noon. Now, all these routes run at 1-hour frequency, so there's a bus coming every hour, and a single ride is $2, and while a senior, disabled, and children can ride for $1, and children under 5 are free. There's also a variety of passes. So another type of service we're planning and trying to improve and enhance is the bus service, again, to try and provide more mobility options to get people to where they need to go.
And as far as the bus service is concerned, one of the options that you have is to have bus service where they're not locked into a particular county. As an example, if somebody lives in Fort Pierce and wants to take the bus down to the mall in Jensen Beach, you have a committee, the Treasure Coast Transportation Council. Can you talk a little bit about how you work with developing your plans to work within the county areas, Indian River, St. Lucie, and Martin County?
Well, that's correct, because Indian River and Martin both have metropolitan planning organizations. So we, through this Treasure Coast Transportation Council, we, representatives from our organizations, the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization and the Martin and Indian River Metropolitan Planning Organizations, meet to determine and to plan those types of cross-county or regional type mobility. So not only through a regional network of the roads and highways, but also regional transit service, regional bicycle paths, and pedestrian facilities as well. So working it from and planning from a regional standpoint, because again, when people are moving, they don't it doesn't stop at the borders. When if people need to get somewhere, they're not just going to stop at the county line. So we need to make sure that we're providing the appropriate connections so they can move seamlessly through the Treasure Coast area.
And do you find you get good cooperation from the other counties?
Oh, very, very much so. Yeah, we've been doing this for quite some time now. And so, I mean, everybody is trying to do the best they can to meet the mobility needs of their area and recognizing. The other thing that is recognized is from a state perspective, as well as a federal perspective, there are available sources of funding for these regional type projects. So the more that areas and regions can be on the same page, the more supportive the funding is from the state and the federal governments. So it's important to work together. And again, we're all trying to do, you know, the right thing. We're all trying to improve our communities by improving the mobility options for the people in those communities.
And that's an important point for citizen participation. I think we're going to talk a lot about citizen participation, because it's the input that we get from citizens that's going to determine where the funding goes, where the needs are. Obviously, citizens who let you know about problems or concerns that they have regarding specific roadways or specific traffic flows, that's going to be important as to how you're planning and you're determining that your funding for years ahead as far as those plans are concerned. So that's why, really, that's the important message, or one of the important messages from our show today, is the importance of citizen participation, because of the fact that if you don't know, Peter, what the citizens need, because they're not communicating to you, and somebody may be making those decisions who may not be as familiar with the area involved than the citizens themselves, that can have a long-term impact on how the transportation system works down the road. Am I correct?
Well, absolutely right. And like in all forms of government, if it's truly representative of the people need to speak and identify what the issues are and what the needs are and how we can address those issues. So not only do we need to get a sense of where people need to go, and what's the best way to get the sense of is by asking the people themselves, where are you going? Where do you need to go? And how do you need to get there? What's a good way for you to get there? Another effort that's underway in partnership with the Florida Department of Transportation District 4, you may have seen it, and there's been one or two newspaper articles about it, but that's the Treasure Coast Household Travel Survey. And you can access this survey through our website. That's, again, www.stlucietpo.org. Now, to access the survey, households will be requested to record their travel activities for a 24-hour period during a typical weekday. And so that's one measure in which we identify where people need to go. And, you know, that's only as effective, will only be as effective as the number of responses we receive. So if we have a low percentage representing the entire population, obviously that's not going to be as strong as if we have a greater percentage. And all the data is kept strictly confidential and it's anonymous, but it's a good sense of identifying where the residents of the Treasure Coast area need to go and how they are getting there or how they would like to get there, so that we can then plan and allocate funding in order to meet those needs. So it's constant that we would need it. Things are changing too as well, because we have the new administration is proposing infrastructure funding. You hear about that. And so what's going to be important, then, when that finally is resolved and when that package becomes developed, what's going to be important is that they're going to look for projects that are ready to construct, what they said, shovel-ready projects. And so that's why our plans and the input in the plans will be important, so that we have those right projects. So when this additional funding that the administration is proposing, and it's a bipartisan effort. Everybody believes there in Washington, D.C., that we need to have improve our transportation system. The only thing they can't seem to agree on is how to fund it. And now currently, it's a majority of funding is through the gasoline tax. And the challenge we have with the fuel tax is that it's not sustainable, because it's charged on a per gallon basis. And as cars become more fuel efficient, you are actually receiving less revenue that's not keeping pace with inflation, because people aren't buying as much gas because cars are so fuel efficient. So we need to find another steady funding stream in order to support these projects, in order to fund these projects to address the needs of the communities. And that's something that's going to be debated in the years going forward. Now, something that's been being proposed is what you hear called the mileage-based user fee. So rather than paying on a per gallon basis, you pay a percentage, you pay a fee for the amount of miles you travel, and they haven't worked out in terms of the penny. So there's pilot projects going on in like places such as Oregon and California, where they're testing what that type of system would be. So that's another way where we can restore the revenue that we're losing using the fuel tax. Because just think of this, Alan. Also, if you have an electric vehicle, they're not buying any gas at all. So they're not paying anything for, you know, their use of the roads. And so we have to find some way to sustain and also increase so that we can provide these other options to help people move around in their communities.
Well, I know in other cities, some cities have actually instituted toll roads in urban areas to try and make people pay for the road that they use more frequently than other roads. But whether something like that would work down in this area is one of the things that you might be considering down the road. But you mentioned projects, and let's spend a few minutes talking about what is actually going on. Like one project that's gotten a lot of publicity recently, and construction has actually started on it near where I live in Port St. Lucie, and that's the highly publicized Crosstown Parkway. Can you talk a little bit about that and other projects, Peter?
Sure. The Crosstown Parkway is a long time coming in terms of its construction, and it was a priority project of our organization for a number of years. And this is the third east-west crossing over the St. Lucie River to supplement the existing two, one at Prima Vista Boulevard and the other at Port St. Lucie Boulevard. And this is being in between that. So it's expected to relieve the congestion on those east-west routes, because the way the city was developed is as the St. Lucie River that divides it. And so it's getting across the river should be able to aid this, and we should see some relief from congestion because of that project. But also under construction that people in the north part of St. Lucie County are very familiar with is the widening of Indio Road. Now that's being widened from I-95 to Emerson Avenue. But we also have in the central part of the county, Midway Road is being widened from US 1 to Selvage Road. These are being widened from two lanes to four lanes. But the other enhancements for both these roads, as you're going to see, is you're going to see bicycle lanes and sidewalks where you didn't see them previously, where you just had a two-lane road without having any shoulders. So these improvements will also make those corridors safer while providing other mobility options, providing people to bicycle safely, providing people to walk safely. But we're not going to stop there, Alan. Where next year, we talk about improving these mobility options. You're going to see on US 1 in Fort Pierce between Edwards Road and Midway Road, you're going to see bicycle lanes and sidewalks will be constructed, filling the gaps that we have there now as part of the resurfacing project. So again, we're going to be increasing the safety for non-motorized users. We're also going to widen Kings Highway from Okeechobee Road to I-95 overpass. Again, and you're going to see bike lanes and sidewalks. So we're gradually building, in addition to widening the roads and trying to relieve congestion, we're also building a bicycle and pedestrian network so people can use these other means in which to get to where they need to go. But in about 2 to 3 years, you're going to see the improvement of the interchange at I-95 and St. Lucie West Boulevard that is a choke point, especially for spring training games and on St. Lucie West Boulevard. We expect to have that interchange to be improved within the next 2 to 3 years. But we talked about, besides these widening projects, we also are some other projects that will improve congestion without widening the roads. And how you do that, Alan, is through the use of technology. And this is something that I think we're only at the very beginning of, that's going to evolve into something even greater that'll address congestion and improve the conditions even better than they are now. And this is in St. Lucie, we're going to have the St. Lucie Advanced Transportation Management System. Now, what this will do, in about 3 years from now, will be have the traffic signals connected on US 1 from Kings Highway to Savannah Club Boulevard. So you know how, Alan, when you are driving and you're at a stoplight, and it turns green, and you get to the next stoplight and it's red, and then the next then it's green and then red, and you're stopping at each stoplight. This connects these signals so that they're reacting to each other, so they communicate among each other, and they will adjust based on the traffic they see. So you'll have longer green times. I mean, you'll be able to flow in a smoother flow all along US 1. In fact, when we think this project is completed, we're going to decrease the amount of travel time by at least 25% along that corridor. So if you a trip that normally took you an hour will only take you 45 minutes. But that's just the beginning, because at some point, all the traffic signals, not only on US 1, the major arteries, all the traffic signals will be connected and communicating with one another. But we're also, you talked about some of the widening of the projects, but something I do want to point out is later this summer, you're going to see on US 1 in downtown Fort Pierce is a pilot project to install this technology that I'm talking about. And it will be installed between Seaway Drive and Virginia Avenue. So we should see an immediate improvement by the end of the summer on that. And then we also the city of Port St. Lucie is installing similar technology on St. Lucie West Boulevard between the Turnpike and the Interstate 95. So those conditions should improve as well through the use of this technology.
Well, technology obviously is going to have a very important role on things coming up. And you are working also on projects that are a little farther out. Can you talk about those, Peter?
Yeah, these are concepts right now, but they're beginning to move forward in the initial planning stages. And this includes, you know, continuing the widening of Kings Highway from the I-95 overpass to Indrio Road, and widening of Midway Road from Glades cut off to Selvitz Road. But also, it's the new interchanges that are going to be needed in order to address the growth that is occurring in St. Lucie County. And we have, so we talk about new interchanges on the Turnpike at Midway Road and Crosstown Parkway, as well as in the north end of the county at the Turnpike and Interstate 95 to connect with the airport and port. Because the local jurisdictions are investing significantly in the Treasure Coast International Airport, as well as the Port of Fort Pierce, for economic development initiatives. And we also have several businesses that are expanding and several new businesses. And you have a tremendous amount. You have, do you realize, Alan, that you have close to 3,000 acres of land suitable for development around the airport? That's zoned and has the appropriate future land use designation that be used to develop industry, manufacturing, warehousing. But to put that in perspective, that would fit the airports in Miami, West Palm Beach, and Fort Lauderdale would fit within that 3,000 acres. So that is the amount of potential development that is there. And of course, St. Lucie County is desirous of reducing its unemployment, of generating growth, sustainable growth, through encouraging these types of businesses. And those businesses will have to be supported by the appropriate transportation infrastructure. So that is the new interchanges at I-95 and the Turnpike with direct connection to St. Lucie Boulevard that the airport has. But right now those are conceptual, that we're just beginning the planning on that. But as we said, what's important is to keep these types of projects, the study, so that we get to the point to where they are shovel ready. We talked about that a little earlier in the show, because if new sources of federal funding become available, those are the types of projects that receive the priority for that funding.
And of course, as the population of St. Lucie County and the surrounding counties increase, that's going to be much, much more important as far as getting people where they need to go, because they might work near the St. Lucie County Airport, or now called Tri-County International Airport. But they may live in Jensen Beach, as an example. So they're going to have to be able to get there, and that's extremely important. And Peter, I just want to take a moment here to alert our audience as far as the meetings coming up that they could get involved with. The Citizens Advisory Committee, the next meeting is July 18th at 10:30 in the morning. And it is located at the St. Lucie TPO office, which is in the Coca Vista Center Plaza, which is located at 466 Southwest Port St. Lucie Boulevard, Suite 111. And you are invited. It's usually the meetings last about an hour to an hour and a half. As I said, you have an opportunity to have public input. There's time for the public to ask questions, to make statements, to meet the staff of TPO, to see some interactive videos that they have in the meeting room that are going to show the future. Like the one that impresses me a lot is the interactive video on Floresta, showing what's going to happen on Port St. Lucie Boulevard and Floresta, that area. You also will have the opportunity, if you wish, to get an application, although you can do that online. Remember the website where you can get an application to go to any of the committees is stlucietpo.org. That's our website. Another meeting coming up is the one of the other committees that Peter talked about, which is the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Council. And that meeting will be at 3 p.m. on July 20th. And Peter, there are openings on those committees for citizens to become members. Is that correct?
And that is correct, Alan, as well as we can take alternates. So if a member is not available to make a meeting, we'll call upon an alternate to attend in his place. But also I want to encourage the public to visit the St. Lucie Transportation Planning Organization offices, because we have, as Alan alluded to, what we call a public involvement gallery. So that's a portion within our boardroom that exhibits our plans and programs, and we have several videos as well as several maps and a number of plans that the public can comment on, can review, take copies with them, and again, provide input so that we constantly make sure that we have the most up-to-date input from the public on that. So I want to encourage that's during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, the offices are open for the public to weigh in and to learn a little about transportation and also provide their opinions on transportation in the area.
Peter, I'd now like to talk a little bit about some of the transportation options that are provided. Obviously, probably the one that most people are most familiar with are the fixed route bus services. You see the buses all the time. And recently, you implemented weekend and night service. And that basically, in large part, came from a lot of requests from citizens saying that we need some weekend and night service, and now that has been provided in a limited way. Is that correct, Peter?
You're absolutely right, Alan, and that was derived from input that we received at meetings and through comments that the bus service was ending too soon, that when it ended at 6 p.m., they were still at work and were not able to get home from work. And so that's why it was extended to on routes 1, 2, and 3, on three of the routes, to 8, for starting at 6 a.m. Again, so that those who start earlier at jobs would be able to get, or school, would be able to arrive there on time. And that's 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. And on Saturday, from 8 to 12 noon and 1 to 4 p.m. So these routes extend our service just started last March. And we've talked about funding and the challenges with the fuel tax, but you know, something that the fuel tax does not cover, the federal funding and state funding typically does not cover, and that's operating these buses. So what the federal government will pay for the buses, they'll pay for your light rail systems to be constructed, but they won't pay the operating expenses. That has to come from another funding source. So how do you pay for the maintenance of the equipment, pay for the drivers, pay for operating the system? And St. Lucie County is fortunate to have a municipal services taxing unit. So that's on your property tax bill, that's a percentage of that is paid that is then goes towards transit. But that's another issue that also needs to be considered in terms of how to pay for, if you want to extend service, but to figure out how to pay for that. And that, you know, it's typically is done from the local governments, from the general funds, but then you're competing against everything else that a local government programs for the general fund, for police service, for parks and recreation, for other things. And so, unfortunately, you talk about public involvement, some of those decisions that are made during the budget workshops, the budget hearings of these local governments, is when it needs to be heard that they need to have bus service increased as well, so that money is included in the budget. Because you know what happens when we hear about that the police department is unable to, needs an increase in their budget, or with several other programs, the chambers are packed with individuals speaking on their behalf. We also need that to hear that same type of passion and that same type of input from people who use the bus system or want to see the bus system improved. But something else that we're starting out, we talked about how, you know, although the bus service was extended to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, that is not enough for those individuals that work even later. And so what is being started is called the Direct Connect service. Now, so when the bus service ends at night, the riders will have an after-hours program to access education, employment, and non-emergency health care. Now, how this will take the shape of, will take the shape of discounted fares on third-party carriers from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. during the week and 24 hours on weekend. Now, state and federal grants have been received in order to sustain this program for 2 years, and it also has wheelchair accessible vehicles available. And we're hoping to add a ride share, ride hailing transportation service like Lyft or Uber to the available pool of transportation. So right now we have several providers with taxi cabs, with vans, but in order to qualify for this or to be signed up for this, you need to call 772-462-2095. Again, that's 772-462-2095. And that's for the what's known as going to be the Direct Connect service for those late hours service to help you get around and to where you need to go.
And if you have any questions, you can call the TPO office and they'll be happy to help you. And that phone number is 772-462-1593. Peter, you mentioned Uber and Lyft. Let's talk a little bit about the changes in transportation. 5 years ago, Uber and Lyft were not even in the vocabulary. And here it's becoming more of a major part of your planning process. How are things going to be implemented? And let me just ask you a general question first. When technology or circumstances change, how do you have a crystal ball to be able to plan for things like that?
Well, that's an excellent question. That's really what we're trying to figure out, especially these new ride-sharing services, to the extent, what's the market penetration of an Uber or a Lyft in St. Lucie? How many, what's the percentage of individuals who are utilizing those types of services? And then going forward with that, you know, you've heard discussion about automated vehicles, and these ride-sharing services themselves are pushing forward with that, because as part of the business model, they can eliminate the driver and have a car pull up. That's obviously going to substantially increase their profits and be beneficial for their business model. So right now, as part of our studies, the Florida Department of Transportation, along with the Metropolitan Planning Organizations of Florida, are cooperating on a study to try and figure out what was the market penetration. So how many of these automated vehicles do we think, do we anticipate will be on the roads? Because the car manufacturers and the parts suppliers and Uber and Lyft, they're already testing these automated vehicles on other parts, in other parts of the country, in Pittsburgh, California. We even have a testing ground here in Florida, there in Polk County. And they are indicating that they'll be ready, have a production-ready vehicle. They'll be rolling off the assembly lines in 2021, these automated vehicles. And it could be, they call it's, you know, they've been called a game changer. It's also called a disruptor, because it could dramatically change how people move around, because it also changes how you could own a car. You know, you have to think about insurance with the car, about how many cars can fit on a road, because cars can, if they're automated, they'll be able to move much more closely to each other. You won't have to have the separation apart from each other. And also, you remove factors such as impaired driving, distracted driving. And Alan, I don't know if you know, but more than 90% of crashes are caused by driver error. So if you eliminate that, just think how much more you'd be increasing safety. So it's something that, while it's just beginning, it's moving extremely fast, because the amount of money that these companies are investing in this, because they see it, put the potential for it. So we need to figure out, though, and that's the government's trying to figure out, what's going to be the public's response? Are people going to be receptive? Are people going to give up the control of their car? Are they even give up owning a car? Because the other thought is, well, you just own a fraction of a car, or you own the service, a portion of the service that you could call up on your app at any time, a car. So you know, you don't own a car, but you own a service that will pick you up and take you where you need to go, whenever you need to go. So it's while it can be very interesting to some, it can also be very intimidating to others. And so we're trying to work through that and navigate through that at this point.
And the best way of doing that is to get the understanding from people. That's why we're talking so much about citizen participation.
Through those advisory committees, absolutely, yes. Right. Hitting it, and through our website, and through participating in we develop our plans and programs. You know, there's some other things I do want to hit on in terms of we talk about mobility options. The other things that we're working on, we talked about the bus system and how there are 16 new shelters installed recently that the public may have seen. These are these metallic silver design with benches, trash cans, and bike racks. 11 of them are located on U.S. Highway 1, and 5 others are strategically located around the city of Port St. Lucie. Now, we also, about 2 to 3 years from now, construction will start on the Jobs Express Terminal. This will be on Gatlin Boulevard there near the Home Depot. And this is a bus terminal and a park and ride facility, because not only, Alan, do people need to move between Indian River and Martin counties, but we have over 12,000 commuters a day to Palm Beach County. And as they say, as the housing market has improved again and housing values are increasing, that if you can't afford to live down south and in Broward, and Palm Beach, where many people work, you move up to St. Lucie County and can afford to have a property. So we have a tremendous amount of commuters that head south to their jobs. And so this will enable express bus service to access the facility for them to take that to where they work down in Palm Beach County and in Broward County. As well as, we also have commuters to Miami-Dade County. It's hard to believe, but they're making that commute every day. But also, something else that's extremely exciting is that St. Lucie's fortunate enough to do. The St. Lucie received over $2 million in funding for the SunTrail. SunTrail stands for Shared Use Network. And this is was state funding that the legislature appropriated to connect a statewide trail network. And what we have through St. Lucie County also is part of the East Coast Greenway Trail. Now, this is a non-motorized trail, so for bicyclists and pedestrians. But the ultimate vision is to have an off-road trail extending all the way from Maine to Key West, and it's going to go right through St. Lucie County. And right now we're in the stages of planning and designing, as well as constructing this Sun Trail through our area. And I've been very fortunate today to meet with representatives from the Florida Department of Transportation, Lisa, Julie, Lynn, and Chandra, and to further who are committed. And from what I understand, heard great news that construction of several segments of that is underway. And what you're going to see on this trail, Alan, is you're going to see a tremendous change in context, or you're going to see it with just within the 34-mile portion to go from the north part end of the county to the south end of the county. You're going to extend through the Savannah State Parks. You're going to state park experience with woods, wetlands. But then you're also going to go through a lakefront experience as you go through Fort Pierce. Not only that, though, you're going to receive an urban experience as you go through downtown Fort Pierce. You'll be a stop for lunch, stop for dinner. But not only that, as you continue further north, you're going to be along the ocean. So you're going to see all these different contexts within a short period of time, and from forest to urban, suburban to ocean. And that's going to be really quite unique. I don't think there'll be another section like it in all of the state of Florida. We have this many different contexts compressed within the short area. So it's anticipated to be an attractor. It's going to be a go-to trail where what's envisioned is people will come from travel here in order to ride this portion of the East Coast Greenway and the Sun Trail as well. So another thing to look forward to here in the future in terms of transportation.
Well, we talked a few minutes ago about Uber, Lyft, and car sharing, but you also have a bike sharing program.
That is right. Another exciting thing, because this is happening sooner than later. It's a 2-year pilot program, and the first phase will be 3 stations with 15 bicycles located in Fort Pierce at the Marina Square, and then on South Hutchinson Island at Museum Point Park and JC Park. Now, these are expected to be installed around Labor Day, and what it is using a app on your phone and a credit card, you'll be able to access these bikes and rent them on an hourly basis for a nominal fee, and be able to ride around on a bicycle of these along the beach there and in downtown Fort Pierce until you return it to the bicycle racks. But in the second phase of the program, we're going to continue it throughout St. Lucie County. We're going to add 6 more stations with 35 more bicycles, and these are going to be located at Jetty Park, the Fort Pierce Intermodal Facility, and as well as Indian River State College, the Civic Center, and Tradition. And these are expected to be installed in the fall. So providing another means of mobility, not only for residents, but also for visitors to be able to get around and enjoy the resource that we have here in St. Lucie County.
Another plan that you're working on the shorter term is called the Unified Planning Work Program. It's a 2-year plan, and it includes not just planning for roadways, but planning for sidewalks, bike facilities, bus service, freight movement, and safety and security of the transportation network. And it also includes complete streets. Well, in my mind, a complete street is when they put the lane markers after the concrete or asphalt dries. But it must have a different definition in your mind, Peter.
Well, that's correct. I mean, that's a complete street if you were the automobile. But now we have different users of a street. We've talked about bicyclists. We've talked about pedestrians. And a lot of the streets, especially those that are built right after World War II in the 50s and 60s, so it didn't accommodate the bicyclists and the pedestrians. And then as we moved into the suburbia as well, it was with the primary for the car. And so now what we have are many streets without so much as a shoulder, without a sidewalk, without a bicycle lane. And now it's going and planning and retrofitting those streets to take all the users into account, but not only users from the different modes, but we need to take into account ages of different users, from children all the way through senior citizens, and how do they use the road in order to make the safest and most efficient use of that. We also have to take into account freight. How does freight be delivered at a particular business or at a residence without disrupting traffic? So all of those things are factored in a complete street, as well as the context of the street. I mean, what's the architecture? What is the type of development that's along the road so that it's consistent, so it complements it, as opposed to distracting from it? That is what's known as a complete street.
I see. Peter, one thing that I think is important to talk about is there are modes of transportation that are being worked on that haven't even been talked about. And the other night on the news, I saw a gentleman who was on a drone, and the drone was transporting the gentleman, the person was in the air on the drone. And if this becomes part of the transportation system 10, 20 years down the road, you might need to have a lot more drone traffic controllers like you do air traffic controllers.
Well, that's true. It's how to, in order to integrate all these different modes and integrate safely, because the technology is moving at such a rapid pace, Alan, that it's difficult, or to the extent that the governments can keep up with this and figure out how to, I want to say regulate, but ensure that it is done safely and properly. So we talked about the automated vehicles and how to address the issues that may arise with an automated vehicle. And you're going to have the same thing if you have other types of modes as well. I also saw where they're talking about automated shipping vessels, so the automated cargo vessels. And also, they've already have automated trucks that are making deliveries, that they've tested the deliveries. So to the extent that you have a automated trucks in the same roadway with traditional automobiles and automated automobiles, how is that all going to work together and work together safely? But I'll tell you something, Alan. I don't think the technology companies and these companies that are supporting these and make these investments in this, they're not going to wait around for infrastructure to be adapted. They're going to, their cars and their technology themselves will be able to read and react to anything that is put in their way. So much like a human. The other thing that we hear is artificial intelligence. So these cars and these other types of technology, they're learning as they go. And so as the more and more miles they drive, even more and more that they're learning, the more information and data that they're receiving, and then they're sharing that data then with the other vehicles. And so, and that that grows exponentially as opposed to a linear fashion. So it's something that is, it's really going to move more quickly than not, I believe.
So there is an urgency then for citizen participation in order to not only get things done safely and for the benefit of the general public, but for the individual citizen who needs to go somewhere, who needs to do things. So again, I just like to remind you that the Citizens Advisory Committee will meet July 18th at 10:30 at the TPO office, which is located at 466 Southwest Port St. Lucie Boulevard, Suite 111. The Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee will meet at 3:00 on July 20th at the same location. And you also have a technical advisory committee, and that committee is going to meet July 18th also at 1:30 at the TPO offices. So there are many opportunities to get involved. You also have other events that you're involved with during the year where the citizens can learn about things as far as the learning about transportation.
Right, Alan. I do want to point out, we do have kiosks and tables set up at times for input at events like the Friday Fest in Fort Pierce, as well as the Farmers Market Saturday mornings, as well as food truck invasion nights and traditions. So we try and piggyback off community events to receive, and we provide little giveaways in order to encourage individuals to come up and provide their input on our plans. We'll have maps that identifies projects and allows the public to provide their input and to vote on their particular projects that they support. Also want to direct people, though, to our Facebook and Twitter sites, that we also have opportunities where people can provide comments, as well as our website. Again, that's www.stlucietpo.org. And one of the efforts right now underway, as I referenced earlier on in the program, was the Treasure Coast Household Travel Survey. This is to understand, again, how far and how often and by what means the Treasure Coast residents are traveling each day. And the households will be requested to record all their travel activities for a 24-hour period. And then this is all this information assembled and goes into the planning. And also another tool that is used is what's called the transportation demand model. So that what this does is it takes the input that we receive from the household travel survey and then forecasts what the amount of vehicles and the motion and the direction, the paths that individuals will be using, not only in the next 5 years, but 10, 15, 20 years from now as well. So that is the another way in which we gain input. But the other thing I want to remind individuals on is if people who need contact, we talked a little bit earlier on in the program about the fixed route bus service, as well as demand response service. And one of the numbers you can call if you are having issues and if you are having problems getting to where you need to go is Community Transit can provide that resource. And that number is 772-464-RIDE. Again, that's 772-464-7433. We talked about the after-hour service, that if we're when the bus service ends, that's a number you can call at 772-462-2095. That's 772-462-2095. As well as the TPO office that Alan indicated, you know, during business hours. That's 772-462-1593. So a number of different resources available to the public in order to address their transportation issues to help them get where they need to go. But again, we can't stress enough the importance of hearing from the public and hearing what their issues are, hearing where they need to go.
And Peter, there's another number for the rideshare program. If somebody would like to have a rideshare arrangement, that number is 772-462-2095. But if we're giving you a lot of numbers here, but the best thing to do is to call the TPO office. They'll help you in any way they can. That number again, 772-462-1593. And also, let me give you the TPO email number or email, because you can get information by sending an email to any of the staff over at TPO, and that is TPO admin, that's admin at stlucieco.org. That's TPO admin, admin at stlucieco, that's probably for county, .org.
No, that's correct, that is for county. And another, if the public is unable to attend one of our meetings, we also do record those meetings, the board meetings, and those are available through any of the local jurisdiction websites, through the St. Lucie County website, City of Fort Pierce, or the City of Port St. Lucie, have links for our previously recorded meetings. But there's always something. I mean, you talked about the upcoming Citizens Advisory Committee, because at that will be presented the Transportation Connectivity Study. So this is a study that we worked on to connect people. We talk about connecting them from where they live to where they need to go, and what's the best way to connect them, identifying gaps in that connectivity, and what's the best way to address the gaps. In some cases, Alan, it's a complete street where you don't have a complete street section. You need to add a sidewalk or a bicycle lane. In other areas, it's extension of transit service or an improved bus service in that. And so this is the results of that study, and where we think at this time, based on the input we've received to date, of where we think people need to go and where they're having problems going to.
Well, Peter, we're almost out of time, and I
can't believe I have only half my material so far done. I have twice as much stuff to talk about.
Well, God willing, we can do this again, Peter. Just it's been a pleasure to be with you, and to hopefully the information that you and your team have imparted today will go to helping a lot of people. We certainly thank you for your time and efforts, and I'll be honest, I would not like to be in your position trying to estimate what's going to happen 23 years from now as far as getting people around. But so far, you and your team are doing a wonderful job, and I'm sure I speak for a lot of people when I say we greatly appreciate your efforts. And I'd just like to thank Joe Martek and his team for making this time available to the St. Lucie TPO. And I'd like to thank WCNO for also giving us the opportunity to be with you this afternoon. And Peter, again, thank you so much. And thanks to your staff for doing just a wonderful job of helping people get where they need to go. And my final words are going to be my own thank you to everybody. Joe Martek Show, in its regular form, will be back next Wednesday at 4 o'clock on WCNO. Joe hopefully will be back from the Bahamas in good order. And I wish all of you safe driving, safe walking, safe bicycling, and God bless all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alan.